and welcome to the One Goal US Soccer Podcast. As always, we'll start how we always start. George, how are we doing today?
I'm doing great today. It's a little rainy today, but that can't kill my vibe. Like I said, I'm doing great.
Awesome, and I'm doing well myself. I want to preface this by saying we know there's a roster coming out today, but we're going to wait until Thursday because there'll be likely replacements for the FC Dallas Sounders game. So we're going to hold off on that now. And a little bit later in the show, we'll be joined by Matt Miazga, who we spoke to earlier last week and heard about how his journey with Anderlecht is going, USMNT, and a little bit of Thanksgiving breakdown from a guy who's been overseas for a while. So without further ado, let's get started and do a little weekend recap. I guess we'll go midweek recap, including Sergiño Dest and Conor De La Fuente, our new Barcelona beast. Dest with the first goal for Barcelona and Conor getting his debut in the Champions League. Give me your initial thoughts on that.
Yeah, a lot to be excited about. And it was a great start midweek, obviously Dest scoring a goal. And then as soon as we saw Conrad taking off his warm-ups, I know we were texting each other saying it's happening. And just the fact that we had two American players combining down the right-hand side for Barcelona in a Champions League game was absolutely incredible. They had that one chance where Conrad passes Sergiño and he hit the shot over the crossbar. I think US soccer Twitter would have exploded if that went in. But just the fact that there were two Americans playing for Barcelona in a Champions League match, and then you juxtapose that with Chris Richards, who also got his first Champions League appearance, first Champions League start for Bayern Munich, playing left back of all positions, showing his versatility once again. So it's just incredible that we have these players playing at top clubs in the best club competition.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. Just a little quick notes on that. Chris Richards, minor injury. He should be okay. He's back in first team training for their game tomorrow. And in terms of Conor De La Fuente, he's with Barca B over the weekend. Looked absolutely electric, honestly. Scored a nice goal, had some incredible dribblings showing of his ability, and the dude looked fresh. So I'm hoping he keeps going strong, and for Chris Richard as well. We also had the debuts for Richie Ledesma in terms of his first debut in the starting lineup for PSV. And our boy Matthew Hoppe, shout out to the Matthews, getting his debut for Schalke as well. That's two starts. That's pretty cool. Pulisic is back. I mean, also shout out Yunus Musa. Happy birthday to the guy. When Tyler Adams said today, I think he's going to be a huge part of the success of the team going forward. Dude, there's just so much to be excited about. You want to talk about those now?
You know, I'd like to mention Hoppe right now. There's no, you know, two ways about it. Schalke is an absolute dumpster fire. Over 20 games in the Bundesliga without a win. And it's a tough environment to come into. And even the fact that he was able to get a game, and not just a game, but a start for his first appearance, kind of shows you where the club is. And that's a major respect to him because he hasn't necessarily set the world alight for the reserve team. I believe he only has one goal. But this week, they put him to training, and I'm sure he showed them that he had the ability to play in the Bundesliga. So just that for him being able to turn his bad situation into a little bit of good news despite the loss, it's very exciting for him.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I think he looked a part. You know, that was important. Obviously, it was a tough game for Schalke altogether, but he looked like he belonged. I think all things considered, we should expect him to at least play some sort of a role with the first team going forward. And I think the same thing could be said with Ledesma. Obviously, he didn't blow the world on fire either necessarily, but look, he's playing for PSV. Like, those are two very exciting things. And I think also for Pulisic, I mean, obviously he's not in the same group as those guys, but he's back. You know, he played. He didn't look incredibly sharp, but it's good to just see him back. And I think everyone, you know, no one's overreacting to that, which is good. That's a good thing for US soccer Twitter. And I mean, I'm just excited about those things. I feel like there's just so much news we should go through. I mean, Brian Reynolds liked the Juventus, you know, our boy John Brooks also doing very well, scored on both ends for Werder Bremen and then for Wolfsburg. Had a great game for them on Friday. Unfortunate for Josh Sargent that he missed out on that one, but it's a minor knock. His manager said he'll be fine. Giovanni Reyna came off the bench, another assist for him and a surprising loss for Dortmund. But dude, it just keeps going for US soccer. And yes, I'm going to say this, Giassi Zardes is good. He scored, had an assist. Like, everyone relax. Let's enjoy that. Let's be happy for the guy. And Matt Miazga, another clean sheet. Like, dude, there's just so much going on. Just give me your thoughts. Let's just talk about it. And let's kind of open this up and then we'll get to our interview in a second.
Oh, no, you talk about Giassi Zardes. That's kind of where I want to start, because I think we are so stuck as a U.S. soccer community at what Giassi Zardes was at LA Galaxy, which was a player who was pretty much a raw athlete who was able to use that to his best ability to somewhat make a name for himself. And I remember, I believe it was a Copa America Centenario. He was okay for the USA. He was a body. He would run guys down. He would cause some problems. And that was pretty much it. But since he has gone to Columbus, Yasi Zardes has upped his game to be a proper striker. He's not just a pacey guy. He's not just a strong guy. He makes good runs. He gets in good positions. Even when he doesn't score, he gets those chances. He drags two defenders with him. His soccer IQ has increased exponentially, and I don't think he's been getting the credit he deserves for that. Yasi Zardes is no longer just a guy who we're going to say 70th minute, let's throw him in to be, you know, run at guys and be a big guy. No, he's a proper striker now, and he is firmly enriched in what I think are three top strikers that would go to any tournament. So I'm excited for him to just keep going, keep proving the haters wrong, and it truly has been remarkable to see his rise.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. One thing I really like about Yasi Zardes is I know it's good to be critical of him. I've been critical in the past. I'll call myself out for that. But I do want to say I really like his off-ball movement. That's really, to me, where I look at and I say he always puts himself in positions to score. And whether that's with his head, his leg, his right foot, his left foot, like, yeah, whatever it takes.
His knee.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. He finds the way to score a goal, and I think that's what it comes down to. So we're happy for him, and we're openly okay with him being part of the U.S. men's national team going forward. If anyone has any issues with that, come at us. Let's talk about it. You're going to be wrong, but that's okay. Doesn't really matter. But, you know, another thing I liked, I guess we can talk about, is Brian Reynolds all of a sudden being a guy. And I think maybe we can save the full talk, you know, once we hear the rosters come out and we see how this game goes tomorrow night. But I'm really excited for him to get some respect. You know, he was a striker before with the national team, and now he moves out to right back. Reggie Cannon obviously moves to Boa Vista, and he just makes the spot at FC Dallas his own. So it's very cool to see, you know, Brian Reynolds get some respect and just see him doing well.
I did mention Brian Reynolds in one of our earliest podcasts. Before Reggie Cannon was even sold, I said to keep an eye on Brian Reynolds, and he has proved me completely right. He's another one who many people kind of thought, you know, was done. He signed a homegrown deal very, very early, back when he was a forward slash winger. Many people thought when he was chosen for the U-17 World Cup squad ahead of a guy like Uli Lanez, they thought, why is this guy there? He's only there because he's big and fast. And over the past 3 years where he really didn't develop much, wasn't getting first team minutes for FC Dallas, those people thought they were proved right. But then slowly behind the scenes, he has made this glorious transition to right back. And he was given the starting spot immediately after Reggie Cannon was sold. There was no Ryan Hollingshead to right back, no adjustment, no let's give him a game or two. He just came in and started every game since. And I sent you the little comp that was made today of him. And
shout out Sanjeev.
Yeah, shout out Sanjeev. It was incredible. He looked like, I don't even know what to describe him. He looked like a 6'3" track star with a touch of gold and the skills of a La Liga player. That's honestly what he looked like. It was incredible to watch. So I'm just really excited to see him keep growing and where he ends up.
Yeah, man, definitely. I want to add one more defensive note. Matt Miazga, our boy we're about to speak with. Nice little clean sheet for Anderlecht in their derby on Saturday versus Standard Liège. So, I mean, I think that's most of the weekend recap. Another good weekend for the USMNT abroad, domestically, and everything in between. Also, Sebastian Saucedo getting back on the bench for Pumas after his injury. So, you know, all things considered, everything is trending up for US soccer. It feels like hardly ever is there any bad things going on, but once again, we're happy and excited. So I think without further ado, we should get to our interview with Matt. And again, I want to thank them and to look for setting it all up. And I think this was a really great interview, so I really enjoyed it. And without further ado, here's our interview with USMNT center back, Matt Miazga.
Starting with the national team stuff, how was the recent camp for you?
The recent camp was really good. I think, obviously, we showcase, you know, what we're able to do and the potential that we have. Obviously, it was a younger squad. But you can see that we have world-class potential and world-class players with a lot of talent. So hopefully we can continue to have more camps. Obviously, we have a little bit of a break now with national team stuff, but I think it was good. We were able to showcase, you know, what we can do. And it was a good atmosphere within the camp, off the pitch as well. I think that was important for a lot of players, you know, younger players to feel comfortable and for us to continue to, you know, cultivate that good feel and that atmosphere, you know, which makes it really good for us to be in camp and enjoy ourselves.
You know, kind of, you're an older guy now. You're 25, you're not old per se, but what's it like kind of being one of the veteran guys in this camp?
Yeah, it was interesting. I was always used to being the younger one, one of the younger ones. And now even at Anderlecht, I find myself being one of the older ones as well. So it was fun. I mean, I was trying to, you know, help the younger guys. I knew most of them, a lot of new faces as well. So I was just trying to, you know, be as helpful, be as encouraging as I could possibly be. And then, you know, just give them the confidence. I mean, they're all very good players and they're there for a reason. So just for them to play their game and encourage them to not be shy and you know, interact with everybody.
Obviously you said like you knew them, maybe, you know, you've seen what they've been doing for the club teams, but were there any particular that maybe you didn't know that much about that you hadn't really played with that came in and you were really impressed with?
Pretty much had an idea of who everybody was. Obviously, some more than others, but one player that I was really impressed with was Gio, the way, you know, he conducted himself on the pitch. You know, it didn't feel like he was 18 years old, which is crazy. You know, he's 0-2. And the way, you know, the maturity that he plays with, you know, getting into tight spaces, finding solutions, you know, getting him the ball, you know, trying to break a line into him, and he was able to control it and move on with it was really impressive to me. And most of the guys, obviously everyone brought their own traits, own qualities and characteristics. And obviously every single one of them, of the new guys, made an impression. So yeah. It was nice.
It was great for us as fans too. I really enjoyed seeing all the young guys. It was kind of like our dream football manager roster, all the young guys.
we've been waiting way too long for it. It was actually beautiful to see.
Yeah, it was great. But I'm curious also, you know, you're a passing center back and John Brooks kind of has that left center back spot like locked down. How do you see yourself complementing him and also fitting in Greg Berhalter's system?
Well, the most important thing is for me, you know, how can I be a help to the team and how can I contribute, you know, the national team? I mean, no spot is really a guarantee. Everybody's fighting for a spot all the time. And we have a lot of competition in every position now, obviously, with a lot of young players coming up and making names for themselves in Europe and a lot of veterans, obviously, continuing to stay relevant and play well. So there's always competition with the national team. And I think the most important thing is first trying to, you know, establish yourself and then putting it all together as a team. For me, I think I enjoy playing Greg's system. He's very detail oriented and he breaks down the opposition really well. The coaching staff do a really good job in tactical meetings of where we can hurt the opposition, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and how we can exploit them. So I enjoy learning under Greg and the staff and obviously being a part of the team.
That's good. I'm glad to hear you enjoy the coach. That's a good start, definitely. Yeah.
Obviously, you just talked about, you know, Berhalter's system, all of that. And I actually am interested because earlier in your career, you were kind of contemplating playing for Poland too. So how close to you were you to that? You know, how did it work out? How did you make that decision? You know, how did it all come about?
Yeah, it was in 2015, my last year at Red Bull, where, you know, obviously I was playing a lot. I was young. I think I was, 19, 20 years old. And Poland, I had a lot of conversations with the federation. I played with the under 18s before, so obviously I knew a little bit about, you know, how they work and the players there and the kind of hierarchy at the federation. But then after that one U18 appearance at Poland, I didn't play with them as much. I was playing with the U.S. under 18s, U.S. under 20s. And obviously I grew up with the under 14, playing U.S. under 14s, under 15s. So I was kind of like involved in the U.S. system for so long that my goal when I was younger, once I like came to my first U14 camp, was always I need to play for the first team, right? So once my season at Red Bull was going really well, when we won Supporter Shield, Jurgen gave me a few calls and then invited me to the last November camp of that year, which was World Cup qualifiers in 2015 versus St. Vincent and Trinidad, actually, the first round of qualifiers. And when he called me, I honestly had no hesitation. I knew all along that I wanted to play for US. I had conversations with the president of the Polish Federation, but it was no like official call-ups. It was just kind of like introductory and like introduction and getting to know each other. And then Jurgen called me up right away. So there was no really hesitation.
we're happy to have you, definitely. And you've been an excellent player for us, so I'm very excited for that. But I'm also curious, you know, there's a lot of dual Nats kind of joining the fold now. You see Yunus Musa, even Gio Reyna is like eligible for a bunch of different nations. Like, what does that say about the future of our national team? And do you talk anything to those players, like Yunus or anything like that?
I mean, one, obviously, we all know the demographics of the United States, and there's a lot of dual nationals that are, you know, eligible for America and for other countries. So we know that. And I mean, most of us at camp, our parents or grandparents or someone from our down the family chain come from a different country. So with that being said, players like Yunus, I mean, for them, it's their own decision. They need to feel comfortable. If they believe in themselves that, you know, they want to play for the U.S. and they feel like a, you know, American, then, you know, they got to make that decision. So at the end of the day, it's up to the player himself to figure out what he wants to do. And obviously all we would welcome them with open arms. So it's exciting times ahead. I mean, I'm always in the loop of younger players who are, you know, eligible for America, so on and so forth. So hopefully they can continue to grow. And when it's time to make a decision, they can pick the right one.
And going forward, the national team, like you said, all these young guys, and especially next year, there's going to be so many competitions coming up. You know, you'll have guys eligible for Olympics, Nations League, Gold Cup, and, you know, you'll probably be in the mix for all of that. So just in the next year, what are your goals for the national team? What are you looking forward to? What do you just, you know, what gets you excited for the next year in terms of the national team?
Yeah, it's a good question. Honestly, all the competitions get me excited. Anytime there's a camp coming up or a time you can put on the U.S. jersey, it's always exciting and it's always an honor and privilege to be a part of. So I think that gets everybody going whenever they get called up to camp to wear that shirt with a lot of pride and honor. So that's number one. Number two, obviously, we have the Nations League final, semis and finals to look forward to. So that's another opportunity to win a trophy and play important games. And hopefully we can do it in front of fans. That'd be really nice. So we have that to look forward to. And then the most important thing I would say is the World Cup qualifying coming up. We all know what happened 3 years ago, but it is what it is that happened. And now we look forward to this upcoming year. And I think everyone has a chip on their shoulder coming into it. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of competition for spots on the roster, which is good because that brings out the best in everybody. And then there's always going to be competition to be playing in the 11. And then there's going to be a competition to obviously perform and win these games to play in the World Cup. And I think that's everyone's goal, is to play in this 2022 World Cup. And we have an exciting future to look forward to.
Great. We're all looking forward to it, I think. I have to ask this question. One of my favorite national team moments, you, Diego Lainez, the famous Matt Miazga look down. So can you kind of take us through what was going through your mind at that time and give us kind of the official Matt Miazga story? If you want
to. Yeah, I'll give you the official one. Yeah, no worries. No worries. So basically, yeah, we're playing Mexico. It's 0-0. And there was an incident that happened in the game. You know, we came together. And that's nothing new for me. You know, I've never shied away from, you know, a little trash talk or a little duel, whatever you want to call it. And it occurred at the time. It just happened. You know, I saw, you know, the player step to me. And then instinct, that's just what happened. Obviously, when I look back at it, do I think I would change what had happened? Yeah, because it was a bit over the top, and it is what it is. But at the same time, sometimes that happens in games where trash talk occurs and things like that happen. And then whatever stays on the pitch stays on the pitch. Off the pitch, it's finished. You know, you shake hands, and that's how it goes, right? That's always been my my way I look at things. And like I said, I have respect for everybody. But on the pitch, you know, I'm going to try to knock your head off. So that's what happened. And at the end of the day, they kind of retaliated and they got a red card right after that, you know? So it was a bit of mental warfare. Right. I was on a yellow card actually. So as soon as I did that, I realized I got to get away from that situation because it was a big kind of melee coming in. And I was like, oh, if I get carded again, that's not going to look really good. I was going to even look worse. So I kind of had to step myself away from the situation. And then it went away. And then, you know, they got a red card. We ended up winning the game and we moved forward. So, like I said, whatever happens on the pitch stays on the pitch. You know, I don't want to take that kind of attitude off the pitch. You know, it's all respect, and that's how it goes. You know,
but you'll be the enforcer if you have to be. Is that?
Yeah, exactly.
And you get the best GIF in U.S. soccer history, honestly. Like,
I mean, now with social media, that thing escalated quite a bit. So
And I will say, I did defend, you know, people tried to say that, oh, you picked on the little guy, then when Edson Alvarez came, you backed down. But I knew you're on a yellow card, and I was telling them that.
Hey,
I was telling people that. I was like, no, he's not backing down. He's just being smart.
Yeah, I saw that. Thank you for pointing that out, because I was on yellow card. Imagine, like, I stayed with it. Oh man, it would have been bad. So I had to remove myself from the situation, man.
Yeah, but you know, us Mats, we know the mental game. We know the mental warfare. Exactly. George can't relate per se, but we're on the same page. We understand.
Exactly. Good stuff.
But let's move to Anderlecht. Obviously, you're doing very well this year. Just, you know, a couple loan moves in your career. How did this move come about?
So I actually had a few opportunities, had some few talks with Anderlecht in the past. I would say 2 years ago, before I went to Nantes, we were actually talking with Anderlecht quite a bit. And that was not close to materializing, but it was in the works. Didn't materialize for whatever reason. And they've always had an eye on me. And then this year, it made sense for many reasons. And I'm happy to be a part of it. I'm happy to be a part of big club culture, you can say, a storied club with a lot of history and a lot of titles. And this year is important as well to establish ourselves again, because the last 2 years they weren't where they should be. So hopefully this year we can get back to where Anderlecht should always be, and that's the top of the table.
And obviously at Anderlecht, you know, you're learning from one of the best center backs to play the game in company. So what's it like having him as a mentor in training every day?
Yeah, it's been really good, obviously, for me as a center back. The little tidbits and advice that he passes on is always really good, and things, you know, you're not really going to get from me as a center back, having one of the best center backs that's played in the Premier League and in the world to give you these tips day in and day out. And at the same time, his coaching philosophy, you know, his style, the philosophy that he wants to play and how he wants to play. And he's constantly with his staff giving us solutions. We always review video of things that, you know, we do well and how we can continue to make it even better. And then things that sometimes don't go too well, we review it, and then we review solutions on how we can solve these problems and why we need to be in these types of positions to solve these problems. And it all comes together, everybody understands it, it makes sense, and then we go on the pitch and train and work at it. Obviously, it's not gonna be perfect all the time, we understand that, but we're working on it. And last week was a bit of a detour in our journey with a loss, but we do know that we need to improve and continue working. We have a big game this week versus Liège, which is the derby in Belgium, the biggest derby, and it's going to be an intense game that we want to win. And obviously, we're still relatively close to the top. We're in seventh place. But we're 5 points from first. So you know how that goes. Anything can happen within a string of games and a series of games. So, I think I'm in a good position where I can learn. I can also, I'm one of the older guys, so I can, cultivate my leadership and try to help the younger guys and obviously get better myself and improve, because as a footballer, you're never going to be the perfect. You want to improve every day and every year.
I'm curious, like, compared to your other stops in your career, is the difference with Anderlecht now, is it a more like cerebral approach to the game? Like, what do you think the biggest difference is where you are here compared to where you've been in the past?
With the championship, it's a way different type of style that we play in Belgium. Here, we're trying to, you know, build out from the back, you know, create opportunities, switching the field from one side to another. And the championship's a bit different. In the championship, the games come thick and fast, and most of the time you're kind of just going off instinct and trying to, you know, just win the game through physicality and speed and direct and, you know, directness. Here it's a bit more tactical, a bit more ball possession and building and switching side to side, trying to break down your opponent and get into goal. Obviously, you know, you have to go long sometimes and things like that, but here's a bit more tactical in Belgium. And then you look at the talents that come from Belgium, you know, when you look at the, you know, leagues, the top leagues in the world and a lot of top teams in the world, a lot of talents come from Belgium. A lot of players played in Belgium and then made the step forward to the bigger league. So I think Belgium is a highly regarded league in Europe. That sometimes it doesn't get the acknowledgement it should.
So actually the question I would ask, and I find it interesting, you're as a center back, you can be the hard man, you can't put in those tackles. Then we also see you splitting lines of balls. So you play in the championship for 2 years where you're getting stuck in every week. You're probably having multiple aerial duels. Then you come to Belgium where you're fitting in, you know, playing those passes. So is there a style of play you prefer? Like, do you prefer playing passes? Do you like to rather have that, you know, just hard game? You know, what's it like for you, just switching back and forth?
Yeah, I like to do both. Obviously, everybody wants to play, you know, a nice football game, passing easy, but sometimes that's not the case. And most times that's not the case. It's always going to be difficult. Every game is going to present difficult challenges. But yeah, I do like the manager style, and I feel like I fit into it well. I know that, you know, I can elevate my levels. I've came back from, you know, a long injury and, you know, just started playing a string of games again. So I just started to regain my match fitness as well because of the COVID and I had injury and so on and so forth. So I know that I can also continue to elevate and improve and showcase my abilities more. And I think with time, that's just going to continue naturally come. So I like to do all of it, you know, get stuck in and then obviously play good football.
Yeah, it's good to be versatile, definitely. I guess moving forward, I mean, obviously you've had a bunch of loan spells. Moving forward into your future, like how important is it for you to find a long-term place down the line? Or are you still like taking it day by day?
A little bit of both. I think there was times in the past where permanent moves were on the horizon, but they didn't materialize for many different reasons and many different variables that happens in football. And I am where I am. But obviously I'm older now, so I do in a way want to find, you know, more of a long-term club, but right now I'm in a situation where I'm on loan and this is my main focus, is to perform well here for Anderlecht and then see where it takes me and then see what happens at the end, in the summer of 21. But for me, the most important thing is growing, it's learning, challenging myself. It's not staying really in the comfort zone. It's continuing to progress. And I know I have my goals that, you know, I want to achieve on a personal level. And sometimes you have a vision and it doesn't necessarily go like this, even down a bit, then back up again, down a bit. And I'm kind of embracing that and enjoying it. The challenges that brings. And I'm confident in myself that, you know, I know where I want to get to and I'm going to get there no matter what. That's my mentality. So the main goal right now is to perform here, perform well, and then we'll see what happens in the summer of 21.
Yeah, talk about summer of 21. Let's take it back to, you know, 2015, kind of when this whole European journey started, because it was actually very interesting. I remember at the time, Red Bulls offered you a DP deal as a 20-year-old American center back, which is almost kind of unheard of, which, you know, kind of shows you, you know, the level you were at. So how did the move to Chelsea come about and what were your immediate expectations going in there?
Yeah. So 2015, I would say, was quote unquote kind of my breakout year. It's where I was playing a lot of minutes and a lot of games, and we were winning. At the time, it was a different dynamic than it is now. There was not much players. I mean, still it's not much, but it's more now. But of younger players in MLS going to Europe For me, I had a bit of leverage because I only had 1 year left on my deal. And obviously Red Bull was trying really hard to lock me down, but I was really open to going to Europe. I had a Polish passport at the time, so it was easy for me to go to England and play. I remember we had the U20 World Cup in the summer, and I thought, you know, I had a pretty good showing, and it showed because a lot of clubs were starting to contact, you know, my agents and getting in touch with Red Bull. And as the season went on, we were winning more. We were at the top of the league, and usually at the top of the league, most players in that team are going to get noticed and are going to get, you know, acknowledged. And, you know, that happened. One of them happens to be me. And things just started to unravel from there. I remember my agents one time called me. I remember late summer of 15 and said that Chelsea was interested. At the time, I was just like, okay, like cool. Like, you know, tell me the other clubs, you know, because I didn't really think I was going to be going there. And then month by month, you know, they just kept updating me that, you know, they're more and more interested. You know, I only had a year left on my contract after that. And I think it was aware that I turned down the deals that Red Bull has been giving me. And they were pretty good deals, I'm not going to lie. But I just saw my journey continuing in Europe for some reason in the next season. And then January came around. There was a few clubs that, you know, put in bids and I think were really interested, one of them being Chelsea. I remember I was at 16 January camp with Jurgen. And I remember telling Jurgen that towards the end of camp, I remember telling him that, you know, a move is on the horizon because my agents kept calling me and telling me that it's going to get there, it's going to get there. They actually wanted to get it done in the beginning of January, but sometimes transfer business takes longer than expected. And I went to camp, but it was good that I went to camp because I was in the off season. I needed to get fit. So in case a move did materialize, I wanted to kind of go in there with some type of fitness and some type of sharpness. So camp got me prepared for that. And I remember telling Jurgen, I remember my agent calling me and telling me that it's done, that they agreed. And at that time, it kind of just hit me like, wow. I told Jurgen right away. Obviously, he was very pleased, and then had to pack my bags and go do my medical, and then stayed, you know, packed my bags and wasn't planning on coming back. So it all happened really fast. And it's every time I do speak about it, interviews, it's kind of like brings back, you know, kind of chills, because at the time, I think it was a pretty big deal when it happened. A young 20-year-old American center back going to the Premier League. And I was part of the first team. I think people forget that I was part of the first team at Chelsea when it was John Terry's, Cesc Fabregas's, Hazard's, Diego Costa's, all those big players. So that was a great learning experience in itself. So I was proud of it. You know, if I were to go back, I wouldn't change it. Everyone talks about, oh, why would you go to Chelsea? You know, they a lot of young players, you know, get stuck there or go on loan. But when I first got there, that wasn't the case. I was part of the first team. I was, you know, in the squads, in the rosters. I played a couple of Premier League games, you know, so I was a part of that. Obviously, when Chelsea comes, I'm not going to turn it down. I'm going to go in there. I was confident in myself. I had a good year in MLS. I'm going to go in there and try to prove myself. I'm going to play. I'm going to, you know, fight. At the end of the day, a new manager came in and thought that I was too young and I didn't have enough experience in Europe. And so be it. I had to go out on loan and continue to prove myself. And that's essentially still the case. So I'm going to keep going. You know, I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to stop. And I still believe in myself. And I know that my goal is to get back at that level eventually.
Don't worry. We remember the Aston Villa game. We don't forget our one goal. I still remember watching that.
You know your stuff, man. Good stuff.
We're prepared. We came prepared. We're curious also, like, with the European passport and, you know, starting your career at Red Bull, did you feel like that was, like, the right move at the time, or did you even try to make a move earlier?
No, because I wanted – my goal was always to establish myself first in MLS. My goal was always to – whenever – when I first signed my first team contract, I always told myself I'm going to be a consistent starter here in the first team. It was close in 14, you know, I had a couple games It kind of came too early, but I was glad because I got a good learning experience. I was glad that it happened because it kind of toughened me up. It hardened me up because I was 18 and I was playing in a team full of veterans with Thierry, Tim Cahill, Luis Ndula, Olave, all them. And I was a bit naive and I was a bit kind of free for all. And then, you know, when I had a couple of mistakes and times got hard, you know, reality hit me hard and I kind of had to toughen up and put my head down and work. When Jesse came in 2015, I think that kind of prepared me, you know, when I got the opportunity and there was an injury in the beginning of 2015 to center back, I told myself that, you know, once I get in, he's not going to take me out. I'm going to make sure he doesn't take me out. I always wanted to be a first team player at Red Bull. It was my hometown club. I wanted to, you know, play a year or two and be consistent there. And then, you know, I had leverage, timing of everything worked out the way it did. And I had an opportunity to go to Europe. And my goal was always to eventually go to Europe. And it happened sooner rather than later. And I had to take it.
And we've seen a trend coming from the Red Bull organization, obviously with Tyler Adams, you know, going to the Red Bull, Salzburg, Leipzig. Was there any ever conversation there? I know Leipzig were still in the second division at the time, but was that ever, you know, brought up at all?
Yeah, it was actually. It was. I remember during contract talks with Red Bull in 15, you know, they were obviously outlining a plan for me in a quote unquote, you know, a plan where, you know, they have these sister clubs and they think, you know, it would be good, you know, to continue playing at New York and then eventually kind of get involved with the sister clubs with Salzburg and Leipzig. At the time, obviously, Leipzig was, I think, in the second division. I actually went there on a training stint two years beforehand when they're in the second division. And it was a good level. I mean, it was good. And the funny thing is, when I went to Leipzig in 2013 on a training stint with their first team, they told me that, 2013, and then I went to 2015 again. I went twice to Leipzig. They were in the second division at the time. They told me that in 5 years' time, they're going to be playing Champions League. And they did it in 4 years' time, or even sooner, I think, 3 or 4 years' time from then, which is pretty incredible. So it was awesome to see that. But, I mean, at the end of the day, that was all talks in the past, you know. Things change, and sometimes situations were different back then than they are now. Obviously, for Tyler, it worked out really well, and I'm happy for him. And even for Jesse, he did the same thing, but in a coaching capacity. So I'm happy for him as well.
The timing really is everything, I guess. That's what it comes down to.
Exactly. Every situation is different, and if the timing's right, if things happen the way they happen, then that's how it goes.
Another thing I have to ask is, I remember against NYCFC, that goal celebration, the baseball bat, obviously they're playing at Yankee Field. Was that pre-planned? Yeah. Obviously, you know, you don't score many goals. So are you planning that? How did that work out?
It was planned, actually. I wasn't planning to do it because I wasn't expecting to score, to be honest with you. I remember in the corner of the locker room at the training facility, it was like me, Felipe, Bradley Wright Phillips. And I remember Felipe and me brought it up that whoever scores, we should do that celebration. It would be pretty funny. It was just chit chat then. But then when the game happened and I scored, I remembered to do it because the first two goals, I think the first goal that they went up 1-0, and when we tied it up 1-1, that was kind of just like, all right, cool, we're back in the game. And then 2-1 was just like a euphoric feeling where everybody's went crazy into the sideline and that's it. And then the third goal, when I scored, it was kind of like, okay, we got kind of time to relax and, you know, celebrate a bit, because it was like, I think the 70th something minute. And I remember telling Felipe, because we're on the other end, I told Felipe, hey, let's go do the celebration. So we're like, all right, let's go to the sand or the dugout. What do they call it? The mound?
The mound.
Sorry, I'm American. I don't even know what it's called. where the sand is, right? With the dirt. So
the pitcher throws, the pitcher's mound?
Yeah, the mound. So we start running towards there, and I'm trying to get his attention with Felipe. I'm trying to get his attention and say, hey, I'm going to go to the mound, go to where the batter hits. You go and throw a fake pitch, and I'm going to go hit it. He's not hearing me. He's not cooperating. And I see he's in front of me, and I don't know if you guys remember, it was like the first time we played at Yankee Stadium, the Derby. It was the first time it was like full capacity. It was all blue, and it was like the red strip. So at that point, you can see me. I remember in the video, I was like, Felipe, come here, come here. He wasn't cooperating. So I'm like, all right, I'm just going to do it myself. So I just did it myself. And the camera caught me nice doing it in tune to our fans. It was obviously, it wasn't a great swing, but it was a bit of, it was a bit of banter. We ended up winning the game. So it was a good memory for sure.
That's great. That's a great celebration. It's super creative.
Yeah.
One last Chelsea question, if you don't mind. How often are you communicating with them in terms of like, are they looking at your tape, or is there even that Chelsea group message with all the low knees? Like, is that a true thing?
Yeah, that is actually true. But it's not like we WhatsApp every day on it. It's more of like an organizational thing that at the end of our seasons, you know, when preseason starts again and you know, medical checkups and things of that nature. But we do have coaches that are specifically delegated to a certain group of like lone players where they analyze our games, they monitor us, they file obvious reports, and we communicate with them. Mine's actually Carlo Cudicini. I work with him. And for example, usually after every game, we have a conversation about the game, my thoughts, and then he analyzes the game, watches the game, and says his thoughts, what I did well, what I can improve, so on and so forth. And before COVID, they would actually come out to visit us every, I would say, 2 months, and we would meet and have like a proper video session and analyze, you know, a string of games that we've played and how things are going, and they take care of us. I can't really say a bad thing about it. So it's good in that sense. Yeah.
But I think that's most of our like big time questions, but we have a couple of fun questions if you don't mind.
Yeah, go for it.
The first one we always ask is what's the go-to song on your pregame playlist?
Funny enough, I don't have a pregame playlist.
Okay.
You want to know why? I want to be in my zone, like without any music, without any distractions. That's like, obviously that's on the bus or whatever, but obviously when we get in the locker room, guys or the equipment guys, they put on the speakers and music plays. But for me, it doesn't matter. I don't really need music, if I'm honest with you, because is music going to be playing during a game where you're suffering and struggling and you're going to need a pump up song to motivate you? Nah, you're going to be in your own thoughts and your own head. And that's where things get going. You know what I mean?
That's the true center back mentality. I'm curious, like on the national team, is there someone who's a designated like aux person?
There's not someone that's designated, but usually Weston gets on the aux and plays his songs and does some dancing. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, he's good. He's really energetic. So he also does some dancing while the songs are playing.
So. He always seems like he's involved. We saw the videos he was having. Yeah. You know, I like your cut, G, smacking those guys.
Yeah. he's really busy, but we love him for it. So
he loves the spotlight. I'm also curious for myself. I'm a Matthew now. I used to be a Matt. Were you always a Matt, or did you ever consider becoming a Matthew?
I think honestly, like I was always a Matthew. Like when I would like in class and in school, I would always write Matthew. But since I got pro, it just came up. I mean, everybody, my close friends would call me Matt, but like formally it would be Matthew, obviously. But once I got, once I went pro, I think Matt just came and it just stayed. And I would, even on whatever I would write, like on contracts or on papers or signing stuff or just like out, like online, it's just Matt, you know what I mean? So it just stayed and now I'm Matt.
All right. Well, I'll let you keep the Matt. I'll stay Matthews.
So yeah.
That's good. You can have your cloud as the Matt. I'll have my cloud as the Matt.
Cool.
Good deal. George, you have any more questions? Or I think.
Yeah. All right. I have one. And, you know, going back to obviously you're 20 years old, you go into Chelsea training. Who is harder to face in training, Diego Costa or Hazard? You know, two different styles, but which one do you say, you know, was giving you a tough time?
Honestly, Eden Hazard was obviously the way he like knows how to use his body and keeps the, like, it's like the ball's a glue, like it's glued onto his foot, was quite incredible to see. The funny thing about that is I do remember that he didn't even tie his shoelaces in training. Like, he'd wear those Vapors and like his shoelaces wouldn't even be tied. And he would just be going about training like normally and just like obviously beating players one-on-one and just scoring goals, doing his thing, which was pretty crazy to see. I'm here like 15, 20 minutes before training, like tying my shoes really tight, getting ready, you know, taped up. And he just comes on the pitch, strolls on with his shoelaces untied, which is pretty cool to see. But I would say obviously he's obviously one of the top player. But Loic Remy, I don't know if you guys remember, he was a really good player in like 5-on-5 asides against me particularly. I remember playing against him. He was strong, he was fast, he was quick, he had a good finish. I remember him being really, really hard to defend in training.
That's a good answer. I would not have expected a Loic Remy.
Yeah, there's always like a tidbit like that where like people don't expect, but Loic Remy.
How about Pato? How about my guy Pato? How was he?
Pato was good too. Pato was, I mean, all of them are really good. All of them are obviously top players, world-class. Pato was obviously a world-class talent back in the day too. So he always had some, you know, nice moves to him and he was good. Oscar in the 5-on-5s was really good as well. Cesc Fabregas at times was just unplayable. He would just like play one touch. Like we'd be playing a possession drill or like 5-on-5 and he would just be doing one touch throughout. Like he would have a vision in his head. Like he'd paint the picture beforehand and just know where to pass. One touch on the ground, smooth, quick, transition, boom. Easy stuff, man. It's quite incredible to see.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty cool opportunity.
I think the last thing is my roommate's from Sierra Leone. So when I told him I was interviewing you, he said to bring up Mustapha Bundu. I don't know if you guys are too close, but he said, you know, ask him about him.
Yeah, I'm actually like in the locker room. We're like three places apart from each other. And he's a good dude. Yeah, he speaks good English. So we get along really well. And he's a good player. So. We just finished training, actually, so I saw him, like, before this, so, yeah.
That's good. I think that's most of our questions. How are you celebrating Thanksgiving? Is it weird for you? Is this, like, a normal thing now?
Yeah, it's normal now. I mean, I sometimes just forget that Thanksgiving exists because in Europe it doesn't really exist. But me and my missus, we're just going to have a bit more of, like, a American cultured dinner with a nice little turkey, like the stuffing and all that.
There you go.
I'm going to help her cook a little bit. So kind of have like nice feel to it.
I like that. Well, next time you come on, we'll send you a turkey if it's around Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll look forward to it.
Perfect. Well, I think that's all from us. I really do appreciate it. Please thank Jan also for setting it up.
We'll do.
Thanks so much. And good luck.
Yeah, cheers, guys. I enjoy it too. You guys know your stuff, which is very rare in the interview world. A lot of people like to babble. A lot of people like to say things that aren't necessarily true. And the facts, but you guys, I can tell, you do your research, you know your stuff. And I applaud you for that because it's rare in this business, in this industry, where people know little details about certain situations and can make a honorable judgment, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
No, I appreciate that. We really appreciate it.
So continue doing that because that's important.
Thank you, man. That truly means so much.
We really like you as a player and wish you best of luck with this season. We'll be watching the Derby this weekend. We'll hope to see you in the red, white, and blue soon as well.
Thank you, guys.
And that'll wrap up this edition of the One Goal US Soccer Podcast. Special thanks to Anderlecht and Matt Miazga for their time. George, you have anything we want to say before we finish up here?
I think Matt Miazga is a guy who sometimes people forget. He was one of the early guys who really went to Europe right away and played for Chelsea as a 20-year-old in the Premier League, which is something, if it happened today, we would still be talking about. It was really great to see his perspective on that, and I'm excited to see what else he does.
Yeah, man, me too. I really want to thank Matt for his time. He was very open with us, very honest, and really just a great interview, all things considered. So again, thanks to Matt Miazga. Thanks to Angela. We'll be back on Thursday again this week to do the whole roster breakdown. Give us our hot takes, give us our cold takes, and kind of everything in between. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving, and we'll be back on Thursday.